Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Brooks in Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. We did device number 6 of Satan that he uses to draw the soul to sin. And it was persuading the soul that the work of repentance is an easy work, and therefore the soul need not make such a matter of sin. And that was last time. And so Lord willing here, we're going to go on to device number 7. And 8, actually. So now the 7th device that Satan has to draw the soul to sin is device number 7. By making the soul bold to venture upon the occasions of sin. Says Satan, you may walk by the harlot's door, though you won't go into the harlot's bed. You may sit and sup with the drunkard, though you won't be drunk with the drunkard. You may look upon Jezebel's beauty, and you may play and toy with Delilah, though you do not commit wickedness with one or the other. You may with Achan handle the golden wedge, though you do not steal the golden wedge, etc. Now the remedies against this device of Satan are these. Remedy number 1. The first remedy is solemnly to dwell upon those scriptures that do expressly command us to avoid the occasions of sin and the least appearance of evil. 1 Thessalonians 5:22, abstain from all appearance of evil. Whatsoever is heterodox, unsound, and unsavory, shun it, as you would do a serpent in your way or poison in your meat. Footnote is Epiphanius says that in the old law, when any dead body was carried by any house, they were enjoined to shut their doors and windows. Theodosius tear the Arians' arguments presented to him in writing because he found them repugnant to the scriptures, and Augustine retracted even ironies only because they had the appearance of lying. When God had commanded the Jews to abstain from swine's flesh, they would not so much as name it, but in their common talk would call a sow another thing. To abstain from all appearance of evil is to do nothing wherein sin appears or which has a shadow of sin. Bernard glosses finally, whatever is of evil show or of ill report, that he may neither wound conscience nor credit. We must shun and be shy of the very show and shadow of sin, if either we tender our credit abroad or our comfort at home. It was good counsel that Livia gave her husband Augustus. It behooveth thee not only not to do wrong, but not to seem to do so, etc. So Jude 23, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted with by the flesh. It is a phrase taken from legal uncleanness, which was contracted by touching the houses, the vessels, the garments of unclean persons. Footnote, Socrates speaks of two young men that flung away their belts when, being in an idol's temple, the lustrating water fell upon them, detesting, says the historian, the garment spotted by the flesh. The ecclesiastical historian, I guess Socrates, not the philosopher. So I guess there may have been a couple of others. I guess that's what that means. Under the law, men might not touch a menstruous cloth, nor God would not accept of a spotted peace offering. So we must not only hate and avoid gross sins, but everything that may carry a savor or suspicion of sin. We must abhor the very signs and tokens of sin. So in Proverbs 5:8, remove thy way far from her and come not nigh the door of her house. He that would not be burnt must dread the fire. He that would not hear the bell must not meddle with the rope. Footnote 1 said, as oft as I have been among vain men, I returned home less a man than I was before. To venture upon the occasion of sin and then to pray, lead us not into temptation, is all one is to thrust your finger into the fire and then to pray that it might not be burnt. So in Proverbs 4:14 and 15, you have another command. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, and pass not by it. Turn from it, and pass away. The triple gradation of Solomon shows, with a great emphasis, how necessary it is for men to flee from all appearance of sin, as the seaman shuns sands and shelves, and as men shun those that have the plague sores running upon them. As weeds do endanger the corn, as bad humors do endanger the blood, or as any infected house does endanger the neighborhood, so does the company of the bad endanger those that are good. Entireness, I guess means friendship, with wicked consorts is one of the strongest chains of hell and binds us to a participation of both sin and punishment. Remedy number two. The second remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that ordinarily there is no conquest over sin without the soul turns from the occasion of sin. It is impossible for that man to get the conquest of sin that plays and sports with the occasions of sin. God will not remove the temptation except you turn from the occasion. It is a just and righteous thing with God that he should fall into the pit that will adventure to dance upon the brink of the pit, and that he should be a slave to sin that will not flee from the occasions of sin. As long as there is fuel in our hearts for a temptation, we cannot be secure. He that has gunpowder about him had need keep far enough off from sparkles. To rush upon the occasions of sin is both to tempt ourselves and to tempt Satan to tempt our souls. It is very rare that any soul plays with the occasions of sin, but that soul is ensnared by sin. The footnote, the fable says that the butterfly asked the owl how she should deal with the fire which had singed her wings, who counsels her not to behold so much as its smoke. It is seldom that God keeps the soul from the acts of sin that will not keep off from the occasions of sin. He that adventures upon the occasions of sin is as he that would quench the fire with oil, which is a fuel to maintain it and increase it. Ah, souls, often remember how frequently you have been overcome by sin when you have boldly gone upon the occasions of sin. Look back, souls, to the day of your vanity, wherein you have been as easily conquered as tempted, vanquished as assaulted, when you have played with the occasions of sin. As you would for the future be kept from the act of sinning and be made victorious over sin, oh, flee from the occasions of sin. Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan is seriously to consider that other precious saints that were once glorious on earth and are now triumphing in heaven have turned from the occasion of sin as hell itself. As you may see in Joseph, Genesis 39:10, and it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. The footnote, there are stories of heathens that would not look upon beauties lest they should be ensnared. Democritus plucked out his own eyes to avoid the danger of uncleanness. Not that we need to do that necessarily physically, but certainly spiritually. Or in an example way. So if your eyes offend me, you with looking at the wrong things, you don't necessarily need to pluck them out, but you certainly keep your eyes from those things that can lead to sin. Joseph was famous for all the four cardinal virtues, if ever any were. In this one temptation, you may see his fortitude, justice, temperance, and prudence, in that he shuns the occasion, for he would not so much as be with her. And that a man is indeed that he is in a temptation, which is but a tap to give vent to corruption. The Nazarite might not only not drink wine, but not taste the grape, or the husk of a grape. The leper was to shave his hair and pare his nails. The devil counts a fit occasion half a conquest, for he knows that corrupt nature has a seed plot for all sin, which being drawn forth and watered by some sinful occasion, is soon set a work to the producing of death and destruction. God will not remove the temptation till we remove the occasion. A bird while aloft is safe, but she comes not near the snare without danger. The shunning the occasions of sin renders a man most like the best of men. A soul eminently gracious dares not come near the train, though he be far off the blow. So Job 31:1, I have made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? The footnote, I cut a covenant. In making covenants, it was a custom among the Jews to cut some beast or other in pieces and so walk between the pieces to signify that they desired God to destroy them should they break the covenant. I set a watch at the entrance of my senses that my soul might not by them be infected or endangered. The eye is the window of the soul, and if that should be always open, the soul might smart for it. A man may not look intently upon that he may not love entirely. It's possible he might end up doing that. The disciples were set agog by beholding the beauty of the temple. It is best and safest to have the eye always fixed upon the highest and noblest objects, as the mariner's eye is fixed upon the star when their hand is on the stern. So David, when he was himself, he shuns the occasion of sin. Psalm 26:4-5, I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. Stories speak of some that could not sleep when they thought of the trophies of other worthies that went before them. The highest and choicest examples are to some, and should be to all, very quickening and provoking. And oh, that the examples of those worthy saints, David, Joseph, and Job, might prevail with all your souls to shun and to avoid the occasions of sin. Everyone should strive to be like to them in grace, that they desire to be equal with in glory. He that shoots at the sun, though he be far short, will shoot higher than he that aims at a shrub. It is best, and it speaks out much of Christ within, to eye the highest and the worthiest examples. Remedy number 4, the fourth remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that the avoiding the occasions of sin is an evidence of grace, and that which lifts up a man above most other men in the world. The footnote, Plutarch says of Demosthenes that he was excellent at praising the worthy acts of his ancestors, but not so at imitating them. Oh, that this were not applicable to many professors of religion in our times. That a man is indeed which he is in temptation. And when sinful occasions do present themselves before the soul, this speaks out both the truth and the strength of grace. When with Lot a man can be chaste in Sodom, and with Timothy can live temperate in Asia among the luxurious Ephesians, and with Job can walk uprightly in the land of Uz, where the people were profane in their lives and superstitious in their worship, and with Daniel be holy in Babylon, and with Abraham righteous in Chaldea, and with Nehemiah zealous in Damascus, etc. Many a wicked man is big and full of corruption, but shows it not for want or lack of occasion, but that man is surely good who in his course will not be bad, though tempted by occasions. A Christless soul is so far from refusing occasions when they come in his way, that he looks and longs after them, and rather than he will go without them, he will buy them, not only with love or money, but also with the loss of his soul. Nothing but grace can fence a man against the occasions of sin when he is strongly tempted thereunto. Therefore, as you would cherish a precious evidence in your own bosoms of the truth and strength of your graces, shun all sinful occasions. And that's the end of device number 7. We'll go ahead and continue. The 8th device that Satan has to draw the soul to sin is device number 8, by representing to the soul the outward mercies that vain men enjoy and the outward miseries that they are freed from while they have walked in the ways of sin. Says Satan, do you see, O soul, that many mercies that such and such enjoy, that walk in those very ways that your soul startles to think of, and the many crosses that they are delivered from, even such as makes other men that say they dare not walk in such ways, to spend their days in sighing, weeping, groaning, and mourning. And therefore, M-O-U-R. And therefore, says Satan, if you would be free from the dark night of adversity and enjoy the sunshine of prosperity, you must walk in their ways. The footnote, it was a weighty saying of Seneca, who was a heathen philosopher, there is nothing more unhappy than he who never felt adversity. Some of the heathens would be wicked as their gods were, counting it a dishonor to their God to be unlike them. So by this stratagem, back to Brooks here, the devil took those in Jeremiah 44:16-18, as for the word that thou hast spoken unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee, but we will certainly do whatever thing goeth forth of our mouth to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven and to pour our drink offerings unto her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings and our princes in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. For then had we plenty of victuals and were well and saw no evil. But since we left off to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted all things or lacked and have been consumed by the sword and by the famine. This is just the language of a world of ignorant, profane, and superstitious souls in London and England that would have made them a captain to return to bondage, yea, and to that bondage that was worse than the Israelites groaned under. Oh, they say, since such and such persons have been put down and left off, we have had nothing but plundering and taxing and butchering of men, etc. And therefore we will do as we and our kings and nobles and fathers have formerly done, for then had we, or we had plenty at home and peace abroad, etc., and there was none to make us afraid. The footnote, it is said of one of the emperors that Rome had no war in his days because it was plague enough to have such an emperor. You are wise and know how to apply it. The editor, I think, says the allusion, no doubt, is to Charles I and the agitation for the restoration of Charles II. Cromwell died September 3rd, 1658. All right, now the remedies against this device of Satan are these that follow. Remedy number one, the first remedy is solemnly to consider that no man knows how the heart of God stands by his hand. His hand of mercy may be towards a man when his heart may be against that man, as you may see in Saul and others, and the hand of God may be set against a man when the heart of God is dearly set upon a man, as you may see in Job. In Ephraim, the footnote says, Tully judged the Jews' religion to be naught because they were so often overcome and impoverished and afflicted, and the religion of Rome to be right because of the Romans prospered and became lords of the world. And yet, though the Romans had his hand, yet the Jews had his heart. This is God's heart. For they were dearly beloved, though sorely afflicted. And I guess this reference was from Cicero. The hand of God was sorely set against them, and yet the heart and bowels of God were strongly working toward them, Job and Ephraim and others like that, and even the Jewish people, the Israelites. No man knows either love or hatred by outward mercy or misery, for all things come alike to all, to the righteous and to the unrighteous, to the good and to the bad, to the clean and to the unclean, etc. The sun, S-U-N, of prosperity shines as well upon brambles of the wilderness as fruit trees of the orchard. The snow and hail of adversity lights upon the best garden as well as the stinking dunghill or the wild waste. Ahab's and Josiah's ends concur in the very circumstances. Saul and Jonathan, though different in their natures, deserts, and deportments, yet in their deaths they were not divided. So they were the same. Health, wealth, honors, etc., crosses, sicknesses, losses, etc., are cast upon good men and bad men promiscuously, or just however. The whole Turkish Empire is nothing else but a crust cast by heaven's great housekeeper to his dogs, is a quote, I guess, from Luther. Moses dies in the wilderness as well as those that murmured. Nabal is rich as well as Abraham. Ahithophel wise as well as Solomon. And Doeg honored by Saul as well as Joseph was by Pharaoh. Usually the worst of men have most of these outward things, and the best of men have least of earth, though most in heaven. Remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan is seriously to consider that there is nothing in the world that does so provoke God to be wroth and angry as men's taking encouragement from God's goodness and mercy to do wickedly. This you may see by that wrath that fell upon the old world and by God's raining hell out of heaven upon Sodom and Gomorrah. This is clear in Jeremiah 44 for verses 20 to 28. The words are worthy of your best meditation. Oh, that they were engraven in all your hearts and constant in all your thoughts. Though they are too large for me to transcribe them, yet they are not too large for me to remember them. To argue from mercy is sinful liberty. To argue from mercy to sinful liberty is the devil's logic. And such logicians do ever walk as upon a mine of gunpowder ready to be blown up. No such soul can ever avert or avoid the wrath of God. This is wickedness at the height, for a man to be very bad because God is very good. A worse spirit than this is not in hell. Ah, Lord, does not wrath, yea, the greatest wrath, lie at this man's door? Are not the strongest chains of darkness prepared for such a soul? To sin against mercy is to sin against humanity. It is bestial, nay, it is worse. To render good for evil is divine. To render good for good is human. To render evil for evil, brutish. The beasts do that. But to render evil for good is devilish. And from this evil deliver my soul, O God. The footnote is, such souls make God a one that will not do as he says. But they shall find God to be as severe and punishing as he is to others gracious and pardoning. Good turns aggravate unkindness, and our guilt is increased by our obligations. Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that there is no greater misery in this life than not to be in misery, no greater affliction than not to be afflicted. Woe, woe to that soul that God will not spend a rod upon. This is the saddest stroke of all, when God refuses to strike at all. Hosea 4:17, Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. Why should you be smitten anymore? You will revolt more and more. Isaiah 1:5. When the physician gives over the patient, you say, ring out his knell, the man is dead. So when God gives over a soul to sin without control, you may truly say, this soul is lost. You may ring out his knell, for he is twice dead and plucked up by the roots. Freedom from punishment is the mother of security, the stepmother of virtue, the poison of religion, the moth of holiness, and the introducer of wickedness. Nothing, said one, seems more unhappy to me than he to whom no adversity has happened. Outward mercies oftentimes prove a snare to our souls. I will lay a stumbling block, Ezekiel 3:20. Vitablus, his note there is, I will prosper him in all things and not by affliction restrain him from sin. Prosperity has been a stumbling block at which millions have stumbled and fallen and broke the neck of their souls forever. Footnote, religion brought forth riches and the daughter soon devoured the mother, says Augustine. Remedy number four, the fourth remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that the wants of the wicked, wicked men, under all their outward mercy and freedom from adversity, is far greater than all their outward enjoyments. They have many mercies, yet they want more, or they lack more than they enjoy. The mercies which they enjoy are nothing to the mercies they want or lack. It is true they have honors and riches and pleasures and friends and are mighty in power. Their seed is established in the sight with them and their offspring before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear, neither is the rod of God upon them. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children dance. They take the timbrel and harp and rejoice at the sound of the organ. They spend their days in wealth. Their eyes stand out with fatness. They have more than heart can wish, and they have no bands in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, as David and Job speak. Yet all this is nothing to what they want or lack. Men that enjoy all worldly comforts may truly say, and he goes into a Latin phrase, sorry. They want or lack interest in God, Christ, the Spirit, the promises, the covenant of grace, and everlasting glory. They lack acceptation and reconciliation with God. They lack righteousness, justification, sanctification, adoption, and redemption. They lack the pardon of sin and the power against sin and freedom from the dominion of sin. They lack that favor that is better than life and that joy that is unspeakable and full of glory and that peace that passes understanding and that grace, the least spark of which is more worth than heaven and earth. They lack a house that has foundations whose builder and maker is God. They lack those riches that perish not, the glory that fades not, that kingdom that shakes not. Wicked men are the most needy men in the world. Yea, they want or lack those two things that should render their mercy sweet, vis-a-vis the blessing of God, and content with their condition, and without which their heaven is but hell on this side of hell. The footnote, neither Christ nor heaven can be hyperbolized. A crown of gold cannot cure the headache, nor the velvet slipper cannot ease the gout. No more can honor or riches quiet and still the conscience. The heart of man is a three-square triangle, which the whole round circle of the world cannot fill, as mathematicians say, but all the corners will complain of emptiness and hunger for nothing else. When their hearts are lifted up and grown big upon the thoughts of their abundance, if conscience does but put in a word and say, it is true, here is this and that outward mercy, oh, but where is an interest in Christ? Where is the favor of God? Where are the comforts of the Holy Ghost? Where are the evidences for heaven, etc.? This word from conscience makes the man's countenance to change, his thoughts to be troubled, his heart to be amazed, and all his mercies on the right hand and left to be as dead and withered. Ah, were but the eyes of wicked men open to see their wants or lacks under their abundance, they would cry out and say, as Absalom did, what are all these to me as long as I cannot see the king's face? 2 Samuel 14:24-33. What is honor and riches and the favor of creatures so long as I want or lack the favor of God, the pardon of my sins, and interest in Christ, and the hopes of glory? O Lord, give me these or I die. Give me these or else I shall eternally die. Remedy number 5, the fifth remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that outward things are not as they seem and are esteemed. They have indeed a glorious outside, but if you view their insides, you will easily find that they fill the head full of cares and the heart full of fears. What if the fire should consume one part of my estate and the sea should be a grave to swallow up another part of my estate? What if my servants should be unfaithful abroad, and my children should be deceitful at home? Ah, the secret fretting, vexing, and gnawing that does daily, yea, hourly, attend those men's souls whose hands are full of worldly goods. It was a good speech of an emperor. You, he says, gaze on my purple robe and golden crown, but did you know what cares are under it, and what would not take it up from the ground to have it? It was a good speech of an emperor. You, he says, gaze on my purple robe and golden crown, but if you did know what cares are under it, you would not take it up from the ground to have it yourself. It was a true saying of Augustine on the 26th Psalm, many are miserable by loving hurtful things, but they are more miserable by having them. It is not what men enjoy, but the principle from where it comes, that makes man happy. Much of these outward things do usually cause great distraction, great vexation, and great condemnation at last to the possessors of them. If God gives them in his wrath and does not sanctify them in his love, then will at last be witnesses against a man and millstones forever to sink a man in that day when God shall call men to an account, not for the use, but for the abuse of mercy. Remedy number six, the sixth remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider the end and the design of God, or the purpose and design of God in heaping up mercy upon the heads of the wicked and in giving them a quietus est, or a rest in quiet from those sorrows and sufferings that others sigh under. David in Psalm 73:17-20 shows the end and design of God in this. He says, "When I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end. Surely thou didst set them in slippery places. Thou castest them down into destruction. How are they brought into desolation as in a moment? They are utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream when one awaketh, so, O Lord, when thou awakest, thou shalt despise their image." The footnote, Valens, the emperor, the Roman emperor, fell from being an emperor to be a footstool to Sapor, king of Persia. Dionysius, king of Sicily, fell from his kingly glory to be a schoolmaster. The brave queen Zenobia was brought to Rome in golden chains. Valens, an emperor, Belisarius, a famous general, Henry IV, Bajazet, Pythias, great Pompey, and William the Conqueror, these, from being very high, were brought very low. They all fell from great glory and majesty to great poverty and misery. So in Psalm 92, verse 7, "When the wicked spring as grass, and when all the workers of iniquity flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever." God's setting them up is but in order to his casting them down. His raising them high is but in order to bringing them low. Exodus 9, verse 16, "And in very deed for this cause have I raised thee up, for to show in thee my power, and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth." I believe that's Pharaoh he's talking about. "I have constituted and set you up as a butt mark," or an arrow mark or target, "that I may let fly at you and follow you close with plague upon plague, till I have beaten the very breath out of your body and got myself a name by setting my feet upon your neck of all your pride, power, pomp, and glory." Souls, what man in his wits would be lifted up that he might be cast down? Would be set higher than others when it is but in order to his being brought down lower than others. There is not a wicked man in the world that is set up with Lucifer as high as heaven, but shall with Lucifer be brought down as low as hell. Can you think seriously of this, O soul, and not say, "O Lord, I humbly crave that you will let me be little in this world, that I may be great in another world, and low here, that I may be high forever hereafter." A footnote, "Grant us, Lord, that we may so partake of temporal felicity that we may not lose eternal." Bernard, I believe, said that. Let me be low and feed low and live low so I may live with thee forever. Let me now be clothed with rags, so you will clothe me at last with your robes. Let me now be set upon a dunghill, so I may at last be advanced to sit with you upon your throne. Lord, make me rather gracious than great, inwardly holy than outwardly happy, and rather turn me into my first nothing, yea, make me worse than nothing, rather than set me up for a time that you may bring me low forever. Remedy number seven, the seventh remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that God does often most plague and punish those whom others think he does most spare and love. That is, God does plague and punish them most with spiritual judgments, which are the greatest and sorest and heaviest, whom he least punishes with temporal punishments. The footnote, he gave them their requests, but sent leanness into their soul. Several Psalms references, it is a heavy plague to have a fat body and a lean soul, a house full of gold and a heart full of sin. There are no men on earth so internally plagued as those that meet with least external plagues. Oh, the blindness of mind, the hardness of heart, the searedness of conscience that those souls are given up to, who, in the eye of the world, are reputed the most happy men because they are not outwardly afflicted and plagued as other men. Ah, souls, it were better that all the temporal plagues that ever befell the children of men since the fall of Adam should at once meet upon your souls, than that you should be given up to the least spiritual plague, to the least measure of spiritual blindness or spiritual hardness of heart, etc. Nothing will better that man, nor prove that man that is given up to spiritual judgments. Let God smile or frown, stroke or strike, cut or kill, he minds it not, he regards it not. Let life or death, heaven or hell, be set before him, it stirs him not. He is mad upon his sin, and God is fully set to do justice upon his soul. This man's preservation is but a preservation unto a greater condemnation. This man can set no bounds to himself. He has become a brat of fathomless perdition. He has guilt in his bosom and vengeance at his back wherever he goes. Neither ministry nor misery, neither miracle nor mercy can mollify his heart. And if this soul be not in hell, on this side hell, who is? The footnote, it is better to have a sore conscience than a seared one. It is better to have no heart than a hard heart, no mind than a blind mind. Remedy number eight, the eighth remedy against this device of Satan is to dwell more upon that strict account that vain men must make for all that good that they do enjoy. The footnote, in this day men shall give an account of good things committed unto them, of good things neglected by them, of evil committed by them, and of evils suffered or allowed by them. Then shall a good conscience be more worth than all the world's good. Ah, did men dwell more upon that account that they must ere long or before long give for all the mercies that they have enjoyed and for all the favors that they have abused and for all the sins they have committed, it would make their hearts to tremble and their lips to quiver and rottenness to enter into their bones. It would cause their souls to cry out and say, oh, that our mercies had been fewer and lesser, that our account might have been easier, and our torment and misery for our abuse of so great mercy not greater than we are able to bear. Oh, cursed be the day wherein the crown of honor was set upon our heads and the treasures of this world were cast into our laps. Oh, cursed be the day wherein the sun of prosperity shined so strong upon us that this flattering world smiled so much upon us as to occasion us to forget God and to slight Christ, to neglect our souls, and to put far from us the day of our account. Philip III of Spain, whose life was free from gross evils, professed that he would rather lose his kingdom than offend God willingly. Yet being in the agony of death and considering more thoroughly of his account he was to give to God, fear struck into him, and these words break from him. Oh, would to God I had never reigned. Oh, that those years that I have spent in my kingdom, I had lived a solitary life in the wilderness. Oh, that I had lived a solitary life with God. How much more securely should I now have died? How much more confidently should I have gone to the throne of God? What does all my glory profit me, but that I have so much the more torment in my death? God keeps an exact account of every penny that is laid out upon him and his, and that is laid out against him and his. And this in the day of account, men shall know and feel, though now they wink and will not understand. The sleeping of vengeance causes the overflowing of sin, and the overflowing of sin causes the awakening of vengeance. Abused mercy will certainly turn into fury. God's forbearance is no quittance. The day is at hand. when he will pay wicked men for the abuse of old and new mercies. If he seem to be slow, yet he is sure. He has leaden heels, but iron hands. The farther he stretches his bow or draws his arrow, the deeper he will wound in the day of vengeance. Men's actions are all in print in heaven, and God will, in the day of account, read them aloud in the ears of all the world, that they may all say amen to the righteous sentence that he shall pass upon all despisers and abusers of mercy. The footnote, Jerome still thought that voice was in his ears, arise, you dead, and come to judgment. As oft as I think on that day, how does my whole body quake and my heart within me tremble? All right, that is the end of device number 8. And so, Lord willing, we'll go on to device 9 next time. But until then, go in God's mercies and in them truthfully and not abusing them. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon. Talk to you again soon. Talk to you again soon.